Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Side 1 of For the Record program number 770, Bitcoin Bird Part 3, Fool's Gold. This is being recorded on January 31st of the year 2014. We have been exploring first in For the Record 760, then in For the Record 764, the new digital currency known as Bitcoin, and we are going to be continuing with that analysis in this program. The subject material is very detailed and quite technical, and in as much as there have been two previous hours of programming on this, I can only refer listeners most emphatically to the descriptions for the Record 760 and 764, as well as the embedded audio files. Those are available in the For the Record category on the SpitfireList.com website. Now, Bitcoin is not really a currency. What it actually is computer code, and it is born of a combination of different things, including and especially libertarian social and economic theory, as we are going to be seeing in this program, and as we have touched on in our discussions of the Silk Road Network. It also is rooted in the Austrian School of Economics, the Ludwig von Mises milieu, which is about as reactionary as anything could possibly be. You start digging into the Ludwig von Mises theoretical nexus, so to speak, and you find that they are not only explicitly opposed to democracy, many of them explicitly in favor of absolute monarchy. It overlaps very heavily the neo-Confederate movement, people who believe quite literally in slavery, past, present, and future. Its proponents have been hailing this as something of an antidote to the very serious economic and financial ills that have overtaken the world. Really, they were overtaking the world for a long time, but they came to a head in the 2008 financial crisis and have been exacerbated in the time since then. Its proponents are seeing it as a way around hyperinflation, as we are going to see. That is really a danger that is non-existent for, and relatively rare, at least so far has been non-existent. It also is being seen as a way around the banksters and central banks and so forth. It is fundamentally unregulated and has already, in its very short life, turned out to be a very bad penny indeed. It is subject to all of the ills of the hallucinatory financial instruments that were at the core of the financial collapse of 2008, such as collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps, the Bermuda inversion, etc. Bitcoin has been subject to, as we have seen in our first couple of shows, 760 and 764, subject to tape painting, subject to pump and dump schemes, subject to outright theft, Bitcoin platforms, both above ground, such as one in Hong Kong, and underground, such as the sheep marketplace, have simply vanished along with millions of dollars worth of people's bitcoins. It is also inherently deflationary and as such is subject to some very serious problems indeed. What we're going to be looking at in considerable measure in this program, again for the Record 770, is the extent to which Bitcoin is also subject to one of the major ills of the contemporary economic and financial landscape. One of the ills that Bitcoin's proponents are presumably opposed to. There has been a lot of rhetoric about the 1% versus everybody else, quite justifiably. And what we are going to be looking at in much of the program concerns the fact that Bitcoin is already lending, is already gravitating very heavily in that direction. Bitcoin is already tremendously concentrated in terms of ownership. Bitcoin mining consortiums or guilds are the fashion du jour, so to speak, in Bitcoin mining, and a very small number of them have amassed a huge concentration of Bitcoin economic power or wealth. That in and of itself threatens the very premise of Bitcoin, the very operating premise, and indeed, it is already, Bitcoin that is already subject to all of the very worst ills of mainstream finance. We're going to be taking a look, too, at how the milieu of Bitcoin, so to speak, is rapidly dovetailing in a very significant way with the milieu of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the peach fuzz fascist, as I have dubbed him. We have been doing a long series of programs called The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. We will be going back to that in For the Record program 771, but increasingly we are seeing a very significant overlap between the milieu of Bitcoin and the milieu of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Snowden himself is a big proponent of returning to the gold standard, something which for newer or perhaps younger or less economically sophisticated listeners, and that is not to be in any way condescending, a return to the gold standard would collapse the global economy very, very quickly. And anyone who thinks, and a lot of the Bitcoin proponents do, who thinks that gold was a good way to go, I would suggest that you read the book Gold Warriors by Sterling and Peggy Seagraves, and in lieu of that, perhaps listening to the many shows I've done about Gold Warriors, including reading the descriptions, which have some very long text excerpts of same. Gold is not the answer. We are going to be looking at how the Bitcoin proponents and the gold bugs are really of the same unfortunate economic feather. And we're going to be taking a look at how there is an indication that much of Bitcoinery, so to speak, is actually controlled by what I call the underground Reich. I can appreciate that newer listeners must, when they hear me talking about the term or using the term underground Reich, must be thinking, my God, Dave is off his meds. Please use the books and the long descriptions on the SpitfireList.com website, and in particular, take a look at the description and audio file for the Record program 768. What the hell does Dave Emery mean? The title is What the Hell Does Dave Emery Mean? By Underground Reich, Part 1, The Naumann Coup Attempt of 1953. Now, we're going to plunge right into the discussion. One of the many fascinating aspects, fascinating in a bad way, in my opinion, of Bitcoin is that people are rushing headlong to embrace something they don't even know who created this thing. Again, Bitcoin has no value. Bitcoin is computer code, okay? It was created by someone, by a name, a mythical name, someone named Satoshi Nakamoto, which of course sounds Japanese. One of the things that we looked at in For the Record 760 is that in all probability, Satoshi Nakamoto is actually a mythical name, and that the real creators of Bitcoin were some engineers from a company called Lantic. That is a German company that is a spin-off of Siemens, which itself, Siemens that is inextricably linked with German intelligence, the BND. Lantic was capitalized by people from Golden Gate Capital, which in turn was started by alumni of Bain Capital. That is the firm of Citizen Romney, Mitt Romney. And the first article we're going to look at is a bit of rumination by a fellow named Josh Zerlan. That's Zig as in Zebra, E-R-L-A-N, as in Nancy, one of the world's experts on Bitcoin, and he has expressed his opinion that, in fact, Satoshi Nakamoto is not only a mythical name, but that the actual creator, it's actually a pseudonym for a European financial consortium. This article is from the British edition of the International Business Times of December 16th of 2013. It is by Vasudhan Sridharan, S-R-I-D-H-A-R-A-N, first name V-A-S-U-D-E-V-A-N. It's titled, Bitcoin Inventor Satoshi Nakamoto is Anonymous Style Sell from Europe. And it reads in part, as the mystery surrounding the identity of Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of the digital currency Bitcoin, continues to grow, it is believed that the inventor could in fact be the creation of a computer collective, IBTimes UK understands. Josh Zerlan, the chief operating officer of Butterfly Labs and the person familiar with the Bitcoin network, has said it is highly likely that Nakamoto could actually be a group of people working the financial sector. Speaking to IBTimes UK on the sidelines of a global Bitcoin conference in Bangalore, India, Zerlan said, quote, one of the prevailing theories that I think has credibility is that it was some group of people from the financial sector that created this. They released it and stepped back and let it go. So Satoshi Nakamoto is a group of people, I think, or that, this is a direct quote, not grammatical, so that Satoshi Nakamoto is a group of people, I think, is a reasonable possibility, unquote. When quizzed where the group of people might be based, Zerlan indicated that they could probably be from the European continent. Again, that gentleman, J-O-S-H, Z as in Zebra, E-R-L-A-N as in Nancy. We will be quoting him later. So again, that certainly is by no means definitive, but it does lend gravitas to our original working hypothesis about people from Lontic and Golden Gate Capital. Those two actually basically being the same, part of the same entity. Lontic was capitalized by Golden Gate Capital. It is a spin-off of former Siemens subsidiary Infineon AG. And as we are about to see, Note that Zerlan says that they created it and then let it go. In many ways, Bitcoin appears to be a classic pyramid or Ponzi scheme. And we would note in that regard, as we begin to explore Bitcoin's concentration of ownership, the fact that Bitcoin, this economic panacea, this answer to the world's economic problems, is in fact already in its very young life subject to the very 1% versus 99% type of dynamic of economic concentration that characterizes the worst excesses of the mainstream economy. Guess who is the single largest Bitcoin owner? If you guessed Satoshi Nakamoto, the mythical Satoshi Nakamoto, you guessed right. The following article is from Wired Magazine of December 18th of 2013. It's titled, Who Owns the World's Biggest Bitcoin Wallet? The FBI. This, by the way, refers to the recent arrest of Ross Ulbricht, the alleged mastermind of Silk Road. We're going to come back to him later. But actually, the largest individual stash, so to speak, of bitcoins belongs to Satoshi Nakamoto. In all probability, Lontic / Golden Gate Capital / perhaps Underground Reich / BND. This article again, Who Owns the World's Biggest Bitcoin Wallet? The FBI by Robert McMillan, Wired Magazine, December 18th of 2013. The title is somewhat misleading, as we see from this excerpt. Speaking of the largest Bitcoin wallet, This honor is thought to belong to Bitcoin's shadowy inventor, Satoshi Nakamoto, who is estimated to have mined 1 million Bitcoins in the currency's early days. His stash is spread across many wallets, but it does put the federal agency ahead of Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who in July said that they had cornered about 1% of all Bitcoins. There are 12 million Bitcoins in circulation. Remember the Winklevoss twins of Facebook and social network movie fame? We are going to come back to them later. Continuing with this article. In the funhouse world of Bitcoin tracking, it's hard to say anything for certain, but it is safe to say there are new players in the Bitcoin world, although not as many people are buying Bitcoins as one might guess from all of the media attention. Satoshi Nakamoto stores his wealth in a large number of Bitcoin addresses, most of them holding just 50 Bitcoins. It's a bit of a logistical nightmare, but most savvy Bitcoin investors spread out their Bitcoins across multiple wallets. That way, if they lose the key to one of them or get hacked, all is not lost. Again, who owns the largest Bitcoin wallet? Excerpting, this honor is thought to belong to Bitcoin's shadowy inventor Satoshi Nakamoto, who is estimated to have mined 1 billion Bitcoins in the currency's early days. That would be out of 12 million to date, with 21 million being the ultimate number that can be minted, so to speak, or mined. So that would give him between 8 and 9% of the Bitcoin total. That would make him the largest individual owner, although in all probability there is no he, there is a they. As we are about to see, the sort of going trend in Bitcoinery is Bitcoin mining, and there are Bitcoin mining guilds. Bitcoin mining is something that requires supercomputers and a tremendous amount of electricity. We're going to come back to that later because, as it turns out, among the many ills to which Bitcoin is subject is the fact that if this panacea were ever to really take off, it would cause huge, huge and devastating problems for the Earth's ecology. We'll come back to that later. Tremendous assistance has been given in the research into Bitcoin by a contributing editor to the SpitfireList.com website who posts under the name of Terrafractal. That's P as in Paul, TerrafractalTYL. And Terrafractal has commented about Bitcoin, quoting, "If you go here, you can find a charge of the hash rate distribution," unquote, "that shows the relative amounts of the total hashes. Hashes are calculated as part of the Bitcoin mining process. Notice how two guilds, BTC Guild and GHash.io, that's BTC as in Boy Thomas Charlie, and GHash is G as in George, H as in Harry, ASH.io, as in India, OWL, control well over 50% of the total mining processing power. That's two guilds controlling more than 50%. Situations like this are a huge problem for how Bitcoin is supposed to work. Now, Terrafractal notes that each Bitcoin guild or mining guild has many, many participants, but also notes that the largest guilds, have a concentration of ownership, quoting, "except that it may not be quite that clean." It may not be quite that good. Basically nothing about Bitcoin here, It may not be quite that clean because as of April of 2013, the top 10 users in the BTC Boy Thomas Charlie Guild accounted for half of the entire guild's processing power and would therefore get about half of BTC Guild's proceeds. It is unclear why a situation like that wouldn't still be the case today. Article from the Bitcoin Beginner blog of April 4th of 2013, Getting Started with Bitcoin Mining, skipping down. BTC Guild is the largest mining guild, both in terms of the number of blocks found and the sheer amount of processing power it can bring to bear. Since the start of this year, it has found nearly one-third of all blocks added to the blockchain. It's worth noting that there's a distinct upper class, unquote, to BTC Guild. The top 10 users accounting for almost half of the pool's entire processing power, which means they get almost half of all payouts. So again, there are a small number of Bitcoin mining guilds or consortiums that are already dominating the market. And although each one has a relatively large number of participants, a handful are dominating that. You heard reference in the last item of discussion, in addition to BTC Guild, Boy Thomas Charlie Guild, also to the ghash.io Guild. That last guild is threatening to basically destroy the entire Bitcoin market. Following article is from Quartz blog. It is by Christopher Mims, M as in Mary I, M as in Mary S, from January 9th of 2014. Now listen to this. Those of you who see Bitcoin as a panacea, this is titled Crypto Ragnarok, the existential threat to Bitcoin its boosters said was impossible is now at hand. Excerpting the story, a doomsday scenario that has long been dismissed by Bitcoin's biggest boosters is now a clear and present danger. At 3 a.m. Eastern Time this morning, a single Bitcoin mining collective known as ghash.io reached 45% of the computing power of all global Bitcoin miners, just 6 points short of the 51% that would be required to break Bitcoin by arbitrarily manipulating the record of future transactions upon which it rests. The result could be, at minimum, double spending, unquote, of existing Bitcoins, which would render the currency effectively unusable. To put this in context, imagine that tomorrow a single corporate entity gained the ability to clone all of its dollars and then immediately went on an asset-buying spree. To say that it would undermine trust in the U.S. dollar would be an understatement. That is what could happen to Bitcoin. ghash.io has issued a press release on the potential for it to launch an attack on Bitcoin. The mining pool said it is taking steps to make sure that ghash.io never reaches 51% of the world's Bitcoin mining capacity, quote, as it will do serious damage to the Bitcoin community of which we are part. ghash.io also said that it will temporarily stop accepting new independent Bitcoin miners in their pool and allow existing members of ghash.io to mine Bitcoins through other pools. Bitcoin Magazine has weighed in, asserting that the success of ghash.io is indicative of a larger problem in Bitcoin. Nearly unprecedented centralization of the mining upon which the currency's very security depends. Skipping down. Popular discussion boards devoted to Bitcoin are freaking out about this possibility, and every post on the homepage of, for example, the portion of Reddit devoted to Bitcoin is currently devoted to the dangerous rise of ghash.io. The next story, next article is from Data Center Knowledge of January 24th of 2014. It talks about the future of Bitcoin and how transaction fees are very likely to go up and become the main source of income for Bitcoin miners, because due to the very nature of the currency, the future of the lucrative, the future of earning money actually from Bitcoin mining is going down. And again, the long term, this article, again by Rich Miller, Data Center Knowledge, 1/24/2014, The Future of Bitcoin, Corporate Mines and Network Peering. The long term outlook for Bitcoin is important for the data center industry, where some leases can run from 3 to 10 years. The emergence of Bitcoin has seen the cryptocurrency soar in value, accompanied by rapid advances in the hardware required to successfully capture new coins. The Bitcoin protocol is designed so that these rewards will become harder to earn and will shrink over time. That means that the economics and business models of Bitcoin could shift over the life of a data center lease. And skipping down. At present, the mining reward seems to be large enough, but under the current rules of Bitcoin, the reward for mining will fall exponentially with time, unquote. The Princeton University team studying this wrote in a recent paper on Bitcoin economics. Transaction fees, which are voluntary under the current rules, cannot make up the difference. The only way to preserve the system's health will be to change the rules, most likely by either maintaining mining rewards at a higher level than originally envisioned, or making transaction fees mandatory. The choice is likely to drive political disputes within the Bitcoin community. And skipping down again, I want to note in addition to the fact that ultimately Bitcoin is coming to something of a crisis, and due to its nature is going to have to begin charging mandatory fees, rather like retail banks or credit card companies that are decried by the Bitcoin community. Notice again the pattern of economic concentration. And here we are talking about, skipping down and excerpting. This week, the four largest mining pools, ghash.io, BTC Guild, Eligius, E-L-I-G-I-U-S, and Slush, held a combined market share of 75% of the network's power as measured by computing hash rate. Quote, "We've already centralized the mining system," says Zerlin. "There are already large pools to control a large percentage of the mining. Centralization of mining will be a good thing," unquote. Well, we will see about that. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 770, Bitcoinberg part 3, Fool's Gold. This is being recorded on January 31st of the year 2014. My name is Dave Emery. Ciao.